Hope everyone is well. Welcome to the February 11th meeting of the Planning Commission. We'll start with roll call.
Good morning, Commissioner Barton.
Here.
Commissioner Rizzuto.
Here.
Commissioner Nickel.
Here.
Commissioner Jimenez.
Here.
Commissioner Shepherd.
Here.
All present.
Can you tell us about the additions and corrections to the agenda?
Yes, today regarding item 12, we have two items of correspondence added to the agenda that you're on your desk this morning, in the room, digitally, as well.
Thank you. Are there any declarations of ex parte communications? None.
None. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone want to remove anything off consent calendar? No.
Nina.
Oh, sure. Okay, let's see.
Fine.
Public comments. Public comment. Anyone in the room like to speak? Yes, please.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Becky Steinbrunner. I live in District 2 in the mountains. I am here today because I read in your minutes of last meeting that CDI Director Machado spoke with you about the upcoming draft Santa Cruz County BESS battery energy storage system ordinance that will be coming your way. I want to thank Commissioner Shepherd for asking for a study session before that comes to you so that when it does, you are well informed. This ordinance is braided with a project in permitting process at 90 Minto Road. It's called Seahawk Energy Storage. It's being pushed by Swift Consultants. And the threat is that if the county does not pass this ordinance quickly, the developer would go to the California Energy Commission for an AB 205 that allows opt-in certification. And this is what is pressuring the leaders of this county to move very quickly at the expense, in my opinion, of public safety. The draft ordinance is not a public safety strong ordinance. Now, I have a radio program on santacruzvoice.com. It's called Community Matters. And I interviewed recently Mr. Drew Bohan, the executive director of the California Energy Commission, and he painted quite a different picture of what this process looks like. The commission has actually denied a project because it wasn't right in the right place. So I'm asking you to inform yourselves. This is coming with great pressure from the developer to the county to pass it through. And the level of environmental review is questionable. We've been told that the initial study will be provided by the developer, and that will govern what level of environmental review everything takes. So, thank you.
Thank you for that reminder.
Good morning. My name is Linda Santos, and I want to speak regarding the BESS ordinance and the project on Minto Road. You guys probably have seen the ag viability report that was provided by the developer, and I want to say that the decision should be based on a report made by a third party. This report is extremely a conflict of interest, and this is our ag land, and they have no incentive whatsoever to protect it. Their report is very biased, and I believe contains multiple false or exaggerated information. They use very select, distorted, and deceiving photos to make their case. There is no soil report specific to Minto Road to back up the soil classifications. The soil analysis needs to be performed on site, you know, soil that's actually on this property. It makes no sense that there's this invisible line down the small section of the property that separates excellent soil from very poor soil. If you go on that property, you'll see that the trees look exactly the same all over the property. There's no distinction, which they don't show in any of their photos. It's a very convenient report for them to show this small strip of very poor soil of the whole property is happens to be right next to the road. Measure J clearly states to preserve the ag land, full stop. regardless of what the financial statements state in their report. Also, these, as far as I can see, the statements aren't audited, and I think that that should be required. Not that Measure J even allows for economically unviable. I think that it'll be a legal liability for the county if we do not do our proper due diligence. We need to ask the planning department to please stand up for our ag land and insist on requiring accurate and third-party detailed analysis. Also, I think that the Commission on Environment should still have a process, part of process of this environmentally sensitive project. I wonder what the purpose of that commission, if it's not for this exact type of project. I don't know how they got dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have approval of the minutes. From January 14th. I had a chance to look at them and they looked okay to me. Did you, the minutes from January 14th, did everyone have a chance to review?
I motion to approve the minutes from January 14th.
I'll second.
I have a question.
Yes.
Are we going to have a study session when the battery facility ordinance comes?
Well, since we're on the minute order at this point, when we get to, we can have those questions during written communications. There's the correspondence is on that item number 12, if you please.
Renee, we'll circle back to that. I'd like to follow up on that too, but for now, we'll take a vote on the minutes.
So we have a motion by Commissioner Nickel with a second by Jimenez to vote to approve the minutes. Commissioner Barton?
Aye.
Commissioner Rizzuto?
I'm going to abstain. I wasn't at that meeting.
Thank you. Commissioner Nickel?
Aye.
Commissioner Jimenez?
Yes.
Commissioner Shepherd?
Aye.
Motion carries 1-4-1 abstention.
Thank you. We'll move on to the 2025 General Plan Annual Report.
So this, again, just as an introduction, this is the County Strategic Plan Update. This is a Planning Commission study session to provide input on the development of the Santa Cruz County. Sorry about that. I was back on the minutes there for a moment. So this is the 2025 General Plan Annual Progress Report. It's a public hearing to consider the 2025 General Plan Annual Progress Report. This is countywide, and the project planner is Jacob Lutz.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Lutz.
Oh, hey, Mark.
Good morning, Chair and Planning Commissioners. Mark Connolly, I'm the Principal Planner in CDI, and with me this morning is Jacob Lutz. Thank you for the introduction, Sheila. We appreciate the Commission coming out for one item today in the rain, so thank you very much for being here. And as Sheila outlined, what we have for you today is the 2025 General Plan Annual Report. So this is a state law and Santa Cruz County Code requirement that requires preparation of this annual report on the progress towards implementing our general plan. And it also has how we're doing. It's kind of a report card on our housing element programs and policies as well. So it includes an update on general plan amendments, housing programs, and various statistics in the long report you guys saw in your packet today. And it demonstrates the county's progress towards meeting a big thing of our RENA. You've heard the RENA, the Regional Housing Needs Assessment, that we have to try to plan for over 4,600 units by 2030. So that's where every year we're going to be doing these progress reports on that. So this general plan and housing element progress reports for the 2025 calendar year, and that's what's before you today. What we're trying to do is get input from you. This will go to the board, and we'll ultimately file this with the state by April 1st, 2026. So to bring you more information in detail, I'll turn it over to Jacob. Thank you.
Thank you for the introduction, Mark.
Good morning, Chair Barton and Commissioners. The General Plan Annual Report includes two main sections. The first part provides information on the general plan as required by county code and state law, a report on density bonus projects, major active projects, and a summary of housing data presented in the Housing Element Annual Progress Report. The first part is included in Exhibit A of your packet. The APR tables constitute the second part of the report, Exhibit B, starting on page 24. This section provides data on the production of new housing units and various other housing statistics from the Housing Element APR, presented in tables required by HCD, the State Department of Housing and Community Development. The county code requires a report on general plan activity, including adopted and currently active amendments to the general plan. Major general plan amendments in 25 included the second batch of the housing element rezones, also known as Batch B. These 43 parcels were rezoned in May of 2025, along with the previous 27 other parcels rezoned in late 2024. Wait, no, sorry. I skipped. There we go. Additionally, a variety of minor updates to the general plan in conjunction with the county code, known as a project, the 2025 Miscellaneous Amendments, was adopted in 2025. This project helps the county maintain an effective and current general plan. Other pending amendments expected in the coming year include continued work on the general plan and code amendments. Updating the public safety element, primarily involving coastal hazard policies, along with amendments to allow and regulate the development of energy storage systems. In order to allow the development of these facilities, there will be targeted general plan amendments necessary. More information on general plan activity is detailed in the attached report. This slide provides an overview of the key APR tables on housing statistics and program status. Table A contains data on housing development applications that were submitted to the Planning Division. There were 22 applications received in 2025, 19 were approved, and 3 are still in process and expected to be approved in 2026. Table A2 contains data on entitlements, which are housing development applications that were approved and are awaiting building permits in 2025. A total of 19 housing projects were approved in 2025, proposing 471 new units. Table A2 also includes all ministerial building permits issued for housing units and housing construction completed. In total, 54 new units were issued in Santa Cruz County and 96 units were granted final building permits. Table A and A2 are large and detailed tables that are difficult to reproduce in a staff report. However, some of this information is included in the summary pages on page 24, 25, and 26 of your packet. Table B also summarizes the data on new units that were issued building permits in 2025 and shows the county's overall progress in meeting our regional housing needs allocation, or RENA for short. We'll dig into Table B a little bit more on the next slide. Table D contains information on the status and progress of implementation of all programs described in the housing element, and is included in your packet starting on page 28. The current RENA plan for the Monterey Bay region allocates a goal of 4,634 new housing units to the unincorporated area for the county for the 8-year planning period from 2023 to 2031. These units are distributed between 4 income categories: very low, low, moderate, and above moderate, significantly higher than the prior fifth cycle RENA. Table B places the new housing units that were issued building permits into affordability categories to demonstrate the county's progress in meeting the allocated RENA for the current cycle. The first column in green shows our assigned RENA numbers for the planning cycle by income group. The next column lists the number of housing units, housing unit building permits issued for each year of the sixth cycle, and places those units into various income categories. Over on the right side of the table, The column in gray totals the number of units permitted in each category so far in the sixth cycle. And the far right column in green is the total remaining RENA by each category. In 2025 alone, as I stated, building permits were issued for a total of 54 housing units, including single-family dwellings, attached and detached, and accessory dwelling units. So far in this current cycle, we have seen a total of 279 new housing units that have been issued in Santa Cruz County. Recent trends indicate that the current housing climate supports production of higher density, affordable housing projects. As shown in the table here, there are a significant number of housing projects currently in development or recently completed, accounting for nearly 1,100 units. All of these projects provide different levels of affordable units, including rental housing and for sale units, accounting for nearly 670 affordable units. In addition to the projects listed in this table, the county currently has approximately 1,600 housing units in the development pipeline. These units are at various stages of the process, including pre-application, under discretionary review, or fully entitled and awaiting building permit issuance. This level of activity is an encouraging indicator of future housing production. This pipeline is particularly important given the relatively slow construction year we saw in 2025, when only 54 units were completed. Just as a note, in your report, Exhibit A, on pages 15 and 16, you will see slight discrepancy in unit counts for projects. The numbers shown here on the slide are the most up-to-date and accurate unit counts. All unit counts will be corrected prior to the board report. ADU construction has significantly increased in recent years because of all the state legislation and updates of the county code and technical support to encourage these type of units. Key updates to comply with recent state law include allowing ADUs anywhere, single or multifamily residential land use, and easing development standards such as unit size, setbacks, and parking were key changes to facilitate ADU development. Over the years, the county has also developed various programs to address these barriers, including fee waiver programs, a suite of resources on the county's ADU website, and the county is currently operating a technical assistance program to aid property owners with ADU project planning, design, and construction to replace the former low-performing ADU forgivable loan program. Several ADUs have been constructed as part of this program. And this has contributed significantly to our RENA numbers, particularly in the low and moderate income categories. In the first 2.5 years of this RENA cycle, ADUs accounted for 182 of the 279 total units issued, or approximately 65% of our RENA so far. The 2023 housing element is driven by two guiding principles: facilitating the development of new housing and affirmatively furthering fair housing. The goals and policies in this housing element address the county's identified housing needs and are implemented through a series of housing programs. The six goals of this housing element are shown here on the slide. Housing programs describe specific actions that the county will take to achieve each of the county's housing goals. Table D contains information on the status and progress of housing element program and policy implementation for all programs described in our housing element. Some key programs that the county completed in 2025 include programs H1B and H1J, which were the adoption of the Batch B rezone program and successfully completes all necessary rezones, including SB10 rezones, as a result of the 2023 housing element. Programs H1C, the Ministerial Combining District, and Program H1H, the SB9 ordinance, both were certified by the California Coastal Commission in 2025 and are now in effect countywide. Program H2A extended affordability contracts for the expiring deed restriction on the Seaside Apartments in Live Oak And lastly, program H3I, with respect to the county-owned site known as 7th and Bromer, the county has entered into an exclusive negotiating agreement with the selected developer in 2025, and the developer is currently seeking funding for this project. Several programs have been fully completed throughout the first 2.5 years of our RENA cycle, but several are continuous programs. Currently, 35 programs have been implemented, whether they have been completed or currently in progress and continuous. That brings us to our recommended actions for today. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission conduct a public hearing on the 2025 General Plan Annual Report and recommend that the Board of Supervisors hold a public hearing and direct staff to file the required annual progress report with the State Department of Housing and Community Development. That concludes our presentation, and we're happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Jake. Appreciate it. Thanks, Mark. What questions do we have of staff?
Well, I have many questions, but I don't know if you want to answer them.
So they can hear you.
Well, I think I can raise my voice so they can hear me.
Oh, for the recording.
People on digital.
Okay. So what's affordable? What price is affordable on these units?
The income categories are based off of a percentage of the average median income for Santa Cruz County. So very low ranges from 30% to 60% AMI.
Yeah, but can you give me a price? I mean, I'm looking for not a percentage, but I mean, how much would a unit sell for?
I don't have the exact price off the top of my head. But
so is there a formula besides percentages? Is there a formula for an affordable unit? Is it 200,000? Is it 300,000? I mean, I'd like to know more specifics on this.
You can ballpark. Okay, it's okay to ballpark.
Yeah, I just need a round figure to find out what is exactly affordable. I've been in this county for 75 years. I'm a native here.
You guys use a lot of anachronisms, numbers and names, which you know in your head like anything. But remember, we don't. So it's helpful if you give us some examples. That's all he's asking for. I know that's putting you on the spot. But
so for rental units, like let's say it's an affordable housing project, the average median income can change year to year. But this past year, I would say for a one-bedroom apartment, you could see a low-income apartment being around the 3,000 mark, which is incredibly high. And yeah,
I hate to tell you this, but there's not a lot of people that can afford a $3,000 rent here. I mean, is there any other way we can do this to get the rents down more affordable?
Well, I mean,
I'm just looking at the middle class here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So this is a state calculation for what low income is expected to be. And we can't necessarily control that, but there are other factors to hopefully bring the cost of housing down. And one of those is, building more housing units. The demand is high right now. So that, as you can see, our RENA is 4,634 units for a reason. We have a low housing stock with a lot of demand. And that is one opportunity to bring housing costs hopefully lower in the future.
But yeah, I agree with that. I've been a builder here for 50 years. So I sold my first spec house for $136,000 in 1979, and it's in a million and a half dollar house today. And it's not a million-and-a-half-dollar house. I built it. I know. It's a nice $100,000 house, but it's not a million and a half. So and excuse me if I'm out of line here, but it seems to me this government in general is becoming a corporate welfare system. The big corporations come in here and make millions and call it low income. I have a real problem with that. And I appreciate your work. It's not that I'm mad at anybody here. I just want to put out what my opinion is, which is probably worthless, but I'm a long-term citizen here, and I'm looking at affordable rent to me, because I got grandkids coming up, of course. Affordable rent to me is around $1,000. If two people work, I mean, if you're making, $600 a week, which my grandson is, and him and his girlfriend combine about $1,000 a week. You're telling me they got to pay out $3,000 in rent is ludicrous.
So, Commissioner Rizzuto, the principal planner for the housing division has provided me the 2025 income limits for the various categories. If you'd like, I could provide that to you either during this discussion here to clarify. The area median income limits are adjusted for household size. And for the very low income category, for a household of one, the income level is approximately $69,000. For the lower income level, that's approximately $111,000. And then for the moderate, that's 120% of median, that's $111,550. And so those income categories adjust upward based on household size.
Those are very low income or low income?
So we have the very low income for a household of one is just under $70,000 a year. The lower income level for a household of one is $111,000. And for moderate income, that's $111,550. And the extremely low income is 30% of the adjusted median income. So if we have your traditional family of four, two adults and two children, for very low, that's $98,000, just under $99,000 income. For the lower income level for a family of four, that's $158,000 approximately. And then for moderate, it's $159,350. These income limits just annually, so that's the 2025 income limits. I'm happy to forward that to you.
No, it's not necessary. I just want to hear it. I just found out I'm low income.
It is an interesting discussion, though, in terms of how do you get to affordability, whether it's a supply argument, you know, you just continue to build market rate.
I see it as a real problem, and I don't know what to do about it. Mm-hmm.
So it's basically,
I'm looking in the future here. You know, my grandkids are teenagers, and I'm sitting there going, you know, unless I build them a place on my ranch, they have no future here. They're going to have to move out. Now, I've built all over the country, and the prices here, and I understand that we have a very nice area to live. I've been all over the world, and obviously this is the best weather I've ever found, you know. But I'm very concerned about the future, and I'm looking 30, 40, 50 years down the road, what the hell's going to happen here. Mm-hmm.
We've seen a steep increase in rents and property values, land values recently since 2015. So, you know, we do live in a beautiful area. We are adjacent to Silicon Valley. We have a lot of pressures. So, yeah.
And so those income levels, just to be very clear, they're based on the area median income. And as you all recall, median is the exact middle income level from the lowest to the highest. And so the very low is 50% of median. And the current median income is $132,800. So the very low would be 50%, which is $69,000. And then the lower, which is 80% of median, which is $111,000. And then moderate is $120,000, 120%. So as incomes adjust upward, then that median obviously adjusts. So at this point, the median income for Santa Cruz County is $132,800.
Pretty scary.
We did just approve.
I couldn't be living here.
We did just approve, what was it, 171 affordable units, so low and very low, off SoCal. There's some 100% affordable units, buildings coming online pretty soon. But yeah, it's a drop in the bucket for the demand in terms of actual affordability. Yeah.
I have some questions. So for the unit to be counted, do we have to have occupancy?
To count units, it just needs to be an issued building permit, so not the occupancy yet.
So once the permit is issued, construction permit, we can count that?
Yes, correct.
And so we have to achieve 4,600 and change units. If you subtract off what we've got approved so far, what's that balance? And if you divide that by four, what do we have to do in the next 4 years? Just ballpark it.
Yeah, well, I would say that we have about 43 100 units that we still need to issue
So
in the
about
next
1,000 a year.
5.5 years. Yeah.
So how do we motivate developers to spend multi-million dollars to have multi-family homes here so we can achieve those goals? How do we do that?
One way is the ministerial overlay, which is something that this body approved. So we have a lot of ministerial, a lot of properties have been upzoned tremendously and don't even have to come before this body to just get approved. So that's one method.
Good morning, Stephanie Hansen, CDI Assistant Director. There's a lot of things at play in these discussions, right? So you have in this community and other communities a historic propensity towards single family homes. And throughout California, we've not built enough housing for all income levels for the past 50 years. Part of the reason why you see the RENA so high is because the state's trying to force jurisdictions to make up for that. When we adopted our housing element and when we adopted the sustainability update before that, we started to kind of chip away at providing more options and more opportunities for all income levels and all types of housing for all people. But we have a lot of factors that are working against that, right? There's still high interest rates. The cost of materials has skyrocketed. Tariffs haven't helped. It's a complicated calculation that goes into whether builders, and you know better than anybody else, right, whether builders can actually make something pencil or not. So I would say to this commission that you've done an awful lot to try to set the correct environment with the sustainability update and the general plan update and the housing element to allow more development. There are many options for how to get there. We're going to continue to work on it. And we hope that the boat will turn around, but it's, you know, it's slow. It doesn't happen overnight. I'm happy to answer any other questions, but I did want to say that's a complicated question that you're asking, and the county's only a little piece of it. What we can actually control, we have several housing affordability programs. We just issued an RFP to provide more affordable housing funding. So we'll see what kind of responses we get on that. But there are several things that are going on in the background that aren't really addressed in the report to help modify the situation. Thank you.
Just to add to that, Mark Connolly, Principal Planner, CDI, just a broad perspective here. So our job is to plan for these units in this RENA cycle and really through that cycle implement the programs and policies we have. The same frustrations that you share, we talk about them probably even louder in our offices during the week and, you know, as we prepare and do all these things. So we understand that frustration and we feel it too. Just understand as we go through this that we're just trying to plan for all these units that are required to implement in state law and hopefully we get them, right? It's difficult. But as you go through and think about your questions, think about, you know, what our responsibility is here to plan for these units and report on these programs and policies. Thanks.
Well, I'm not blaming anybody here. I mean, this is a situation that we live with. So my hat goes off to you guys because you have to plan for this and it's an impossible deal. The other question I'd like to ask, when you're building 4,000 units, what is the parking accessibility for the units? I mean, are you giving two parking places per unit?
Adding park.
Well, then have you addressed the problem in the neighborhoods?
That's
if you're not going to give enough parking, then you're going to go into neighborhoods and you're going to disrupt their lifestyle with cars all over the place.
I'm calling that an unfunded state mandate that we just approved a project with 57 units, 32 parking spaces. The county and the community will be left to deal with the mess.
That's a state mandate?
That's a state mandate, yeah.
Because it should be two parking places per unit and one parking place per five units for guest parking.
County code allows for that. State supersedes that and forces some of these things down our throats. So
a lot of what you think is the standard has been overturned by the state, not the county. The county has had to respond to a tremendous number of changes from the state. And I'd like to suggest you kind of meet with the planners privately and they could, you know, help you with those kind of questions.
I'm addressing activity in the rest of the communities because obviously, you know, if I have a house, I'm lucky I live up in the mountain there. But, you know, if I have a house with only two parking places in front of it and I can't even use them because we've got 4,000 units and there's 8,000 cars, you know, on an average, it's two parking places per unit. Is there anything you can do about that? Like maybe force the developers to put underground parking in or something for their specific units?
When we can, we definitely try to make sure there's adequate parking. And when we're advised by council that we cannot, then we don't.
So are we, mandate. Do we have to go by the state mandate and we can't fight the state at all?
No.
Politically, we can, and that's you know, we keep reminding folks, go talk to your state legislators. They work in this building. They're very nice people. We need to continue to press our state legislators on that. They develop these policies, and then we have to implement. Abide by them. Yeah.
It trumps what we're doing. I mean, it can take, the mandate governs over.
Oh, yeah, I'm aware of it. Yeah. I'm a veteran, remember?
Yeah.
I fought for freedom and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
Didn't work, did it?
And I'll just add, Mark Arnold, principal planner. There have been a lot of improvements regionally to our transportation systems, and those are continuing to ongo, you know, more headway times for Metro. Obviously, we're a little behind the boat here in this county for rail, but there's a lot of, you know, infrastructure being planned for to kind of make up for that. So we're not requiring parking. We have ways to, you know, get people in multimodal ways to get around and commute and things like that. So keep that in mind too, that there is that side of it. Even though you see projects with reduced parking, we're increasing our transportation systems tremendously as well to catch up for that.
That's the goal.
I my hat goes off to you guys. I mean, the roads that are in Santa Cruz County were here in the 50s. You know, we have no more room for this stuff. So I don't know what we're going to do, but I'm not keen on what's happening personally, but that's just me.
I always appreciate the comments. It's an interesting conversation for sure. I had some questions. Page 8 of the staff report, the Streamline Santa Cruz County. I was wondering if you, Jacob and Mark, if you guys could talk about Streamline Santa Cruz County, how it came about, kind of define it for us, and talk about who's guiding that policy, you know, the focus groups and different things.
I'm going to defer to Assistant Director Stephanie Hansen on that one. She's been a lot closer to it than I have.
Good morning, Stephanie Hansen, CDI. Streamline Santa Cruz County is a program that was initiated by the County Executive Office to try to address the public's perceived frustration with the permitting process. So CDI has been working with the CEO's office for about a year and a half now. We've developed 14 programs. They were recently combined into 12. They address everything from standard operating procedures to needed code amendments. You're going to hear at the annual code amendments in an upcoming meeting very soon. Some of those are meant to help streamline the code, bring clarity to the code so that the public and the planners can get through the reviews in an easier way. There's also a program for a much larger code amendment project that is really aimed at objective standards and reducing discretionary review. There's programs that specifically address technology. So we have lots of kind of systems. We want to make sure that they're all talking to one another appropriately. So within the 14 programs that are ongoing, some have been completed, but some are ongoing. These are all meant to kind of address different aspects of permit approval. Does that help?
Yes, for sure. So how are these recommendations developed? Who's developing them for these programs? Who's at the table?
The recommendations were developed by county staff and CEO's office. There are stakeholder groups also that have been involved that are providing feedback on what's been good, what's been difficult. There's a lot of survey activity that's going on after permits are issued and after meetings with staff at the counter. I forgot to mention one of the big programs is looking specifically at the CZU rebuild areas as well. So it's been, and there have been several reports now, three or four, to the Board of Supervisors. They've been kind of directing, where resources are provided to help with some of the programs.
And who can you name the stakeholder groups?
I can't name the specifics, but these are people who have mostly developers who have been through the permitting process and therefore have feedback to give on that.
And one of the improvements that came as a direct result of the stakeholders, that would be the clients that are making applications. We prior to May of 2025, in order to manage staff workload, we gatekeeped, if you will, submittal of applications. And we then, in May, middle of May, we allowed same-day submittal for applicants to submit whenever they're ready to make their application to reduce delays associated with the review of projects. So that's been a significant success on the part of the department. And I believe the applicants are very happy about it as well. And it's absolutely made an improvement for staff workload, reducing the involvement of staff to manually manage the portal. So the portal is open 24/7 during business hours for submittal of applications.
What is our average of permits per year? What have we been averaging?
Do you mean for
unit.
Dwelling unit?
Yeah, dwelling units.
They've been fluctuating the past few years, but prior to this past year, I would say we were steady at a little over 100.
We were at 200 last year, and that was a good year, up from about 100, I think, average.
Yeah, so 2024, we had 146. The prior year of 2023, we had 79 in the second half alone. So if I recall, the years past 2020, we were pretty steady over 100 units.
And what happens if we don't achieve the arena numbers in 2030?
Well, we need to keep making progress and meeting our general plan housing element programs. That's really important for having a certified housing element so that we don't get back into a builder's remedy situation if HCD, Housing and Community Development, decides we're not making enough progress. They could rescind our certification. I think part of what we've been talking about with that whole parking discussion is that we had three builder's remedy projects, applied for. The commission has heard from two, and it really reduced our ability to implement our own codes, which I know that the commission felt that frustration. So that's a very important thing. If we're not making progress and not meeting our RENA, there aren't specific ramifications of that. But that one ramification of if you're not meeting, you know, your housing element programs to try to implement, how you're going to get to your RENA, then that could be pretty disruptive for us. That could also change. So that's how it is right now. But it could certainly, I could see the legislature really trying to push harder on creating consequences. Could happen.
And I'll just add, that's the point of this report, right? So we can make course corrections in these 8 years. There'll be eight of these reports that go, and we have to submit these to HCD. They can give us feedback. And if we're experiencing, you know, maybe, you know, sequential years of difficulty in a certain area, we can bring that up. And so hopefully at the end, we get to the end of it. We have to do the seventh cycle. We have a good groundwork laid for perhaps a more reasonable RENA the next year, or good explanation of why we weren't able to achieve certain things within this planning period.
How about relaxing the zoning? I know you have zoning for, you know, 40 acre one house, 20 acre one house, 10 acre one house, 5 acre one house. How about relaxing that zoning and then give an incentive to build 1200 square foot three bedroom one bath homes and make it permits affordable in that aspect? So you know, when I built my house, my permit was $538 back in 1979. Can we do an incentive to get smaller homes, starter homes, like after World War II, you know, starter homes were, because my relatives and my in-laws, you know, bought a three bedroom, one bath home after World War II for $9,000. And as they increased their income, they added onto it to make it a five bedroom home later. So instead of building 2,400 to 3,000 square foot homes, how about we start lower, but give an incentive on a permit cost and maybe a little bit less money there, and then loosen up the zoning. Instead of 5 acres, let's do four homes per acre or something and do it that way.
I'll say that, you know, what Stephanie was talking about with the Streamline program that we have, Streamline Santa Cruz, we can't afford we can't get involved at all with the economic factors here. But what we can do is we can plan for and change the zoning. We've done things like we touched on in the senior report as well, the ministerial overlay that we did last year. So that was a really neat opportunity to bring forward a ministerial process as somebody hit, you know, some qualifications for that. And that's a really great way, we think, to get, you know, good housing units. So we've done a lot of that zoning you're talking about. We've changed it. We've done general plan amendments that we've changed to make housing easier. The housing element, we've got a really nice, what we call opportunity site map that we think we've carefully checked and thoroughly evaluated how we can get units that we think are feasible. It's not just putting something on a map. So I think, you know, from our perspective and our efforts, we've done everything we can. And again, we can't affect those external sort of economic factors in the marketplace. But, you know, we've done more than most in this county.
I think, too, one of the principles of development of the housing element involved fair housing practices, which required the county to locate housing units within the urban service line or in close proximity to access to resources, you know, medical, retail, et cetera. So the work that has been accomplished with the housing element provides those units in the urban service line and not in the rural areas. So reducing lot sizes largely would address rural standards, not the urban standards. I believe that you're kind of hinting at. So that's been accomplished with the housing update as well as the rezonings in the urban area.
I think there would be a lot of discussion in the rural area about reducing some of the prohibitions that are there because there's no sewers and there's really not the water and we have one road out. So there's a lot of factors to take into consideration. A lot of the land is used.
But it does take a lot of responsibility off of government if you go out to the rural areas and let the landowner worry about water and septic and stuff like that. I mean, you know,
well,
some people don't mind being 20 miles from a store. I certainly don't mind being 20 miles from a store. I mean,
well, maybe we could kind of get through this report.
You know,
Appreciate that. I did have another question about the streamline Santa Cruz County. So the stakeholder groups, you've got developers covered, actively participating. Are there resident, is there a resident stakeholder group? You know, some of our constituents, is there a CZU, you know, fire victim stakeholder group? Is there a, you know, just the average Joe who wants to rebuild a deck kind of, that those are the kind of calls we get, right?
The stakeholder groups do include residents who've been through the permitting process. So we're trying to make improvements from those who know, those who are on the other side of the counter. CZU has a very active group that has been having a lot of input into the potential for moving those permits along, but it's more complicated than we should get into here today, because when you start to try to rebuild in the rural areas, you're running into all kinds of environmental constraints that sometimes require a lot of resources to build around or to build foundations for. So it's very complicated.
And the state has a lot of opinions about the rural areas too.
And I'm getting at, you know, we hear from folks who are just doing an addition, or, you know, they're regular folks who have single family homes or whatever, who are doing, needing permits for things, and they've been through the process and have had their own different kind of frustrations than a major developer. So making sure that they are covered as well.
The small ones are covered as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Thank you. Good morning, Matt Machado, your CDI director. Just chime in on what Stephanie was sharing. That stakeholder group does include design professionals who represent, you know, the remodel projects, the deck projects, the new single family homes. So we've got a lot of great input from designers, whether they're architects, engineers, not certified home designers. And so we've really tried to capture that perspective from all levels of projects, whether it's the simple kitchen remodel up to additions and brand new homes. And so that's been the stakeholder input we've gotten. I'll add the CZU input. It includes the long-term recovery group, which is a very active group, and they're in touch with a lot of the CZU victims. Additionally, we sent out mailers and have placed phone calls to all the remaining victims that haven't rebuilt to try to get input, like asking them for input, not just saying, hey, you can call us. No, we're calling you. We sent letters. We've sent emails. And so we're trying to capture as much of that input as we can to understand where the roadblocks are, you know, whether it's CZU or just every homeowner in the county or even renters in the county. We're trying to get everybody's input.
And then you mentioned that part of that process is to reduce discretionary. And I'm wondering how that impacts this body. Are you reducing the things that come before the Planning Commission through the Streamline Santa Cruz County?
Yeah, well, I think some of the policy changes at the code level could streamline some of that. So there is some of that, you know, the overlays. But the interesting part about, you know, the zoning overlays, those have come through the commission and to the board, but it does streamline the implementation of projects because we've had an opportunity to weigh in on the front end. But yes, some of that is an effort to streamline the process to go a bit faster, which actually speaks to some of the cost issues. If we can zone it the way we see fit and then give ministerial approvals beyond that, we can go faster to get to implementation and construction.
It absolutely, it is, we do need a balance, right? To have public input in addition to streamlining where we can, where appropriate. But reducing public input is, you know, we definitely need, you know, that's a red flag, right? We want to make sure that the public has the opportunity to weigh in on land use. It's such a critical issue to our community.
Right.
If I may also note that the assistant director provided a report to the board on Streamline Santa Cruz on January 27th, if your commissioners are interested in reviewing the record, the report, and the public record on that. And then she also noted that she'll be reporting back to the board in April on Streamline Santa Cruz. So there'll be a more robust, there's more robust documents online and that we provided in the future regarding the status of these programs.
Thank you.
And Chair Barton's point too, these are all public hearings, right? So even if you're not in a stakeholder group, you're going to see, you know, if you're following what we do here, you're going to see the notice in the newspaper and you'll hear about it on the website and things like that. So the public can get involved in other ways too through these hearing processes that are going to go on now for, you know, at least another year. So a lot of opportunity for the public.
It's challenging because most of the public doesn't understand a code change that would reduce their ability to weigh in a future at a future time, right? That's a tough, you know, to communicate that, I think, is going to be challenging, and to get folks involved to speak up for themselves should they foresee a need to weigh in publicly. Anyway, it's a question of it's a democratic question. It's a larger question.
So can we finish the report?
Any other questions or comments about the report? Yeah. It's good to have these reports. It allows us to have a robust conversation about so many critical issues in our community.
I could talk on this for an hour.
And so could I, right? I think we all could, but I know, right? And I appreciate that. Are there any other questions for staff?
Actually, I've got a comment I want to make. Comment. I think it's, and I'm glad you brought up CZU because, you know, my client and I played hell getting permits for CZU, and her house was built in 1996, and it took us 2 years to get permits for her house for some reason. I have no idea. Four Leaf lost her file twice, cost us a year. I mean, it goes on and on and on. So she ended up buying a house. She got fed up. And we've got a vacant house up there now with not a vacant house, a vacant lot with the building material on it. And it's for sale now with permits, and we can't get a hit on it. But I'd like to see a catastrophic event clause where and this has been done in other areas in Ferndale, California, in their earthquake. They suspended all permits and fees and just said, get into your homes. And I think it's atrocious that we hold people up after losing everything. My client lost everything, family history and all that, when she had that fire. And I don't understand why we just can't go in there the next day and start building. And it has happened in the past. In the floods of 55, 58, and 61, we recouped in months because there was no planning department to deal with. The fire in 1964 up on Summit Road, all those homes were rebuilt within a year. As soon as the fire was done, they went in there, bulldozed and cleared and built homes. The CZU, the earthquake, the floods of the 80s, this county has always thrown so many obstacles in the way of private citizens. And I'm going to tell you, frankly, it pisses me off. When a person's down, why do you have to hit them while they're down? That's just a statement I want to make. I think we could do something much better on a catastrophic event. Just say, people, get in your homes. You got licensed contractors. I'm licensed. Everybody I hire is licensed. The county has no responsibility over this stuff. And that's it. I'm done.
Appreciate
I could go on for hours. I got too much history behind me is the problem.
All right. Thank you. No, it's a good discussion. Okay. So let's see. We have... I think we've kind of exhausted this report. Have any comments? Other questions?
Yes. Yes. No. Do we have to listen to the people online?
Oh,
I haven't asked my comments yet. Okay, cool. I just want to say I enjoyed reading the report. It's pretty long. I had a question about where you guys say you consult tribal groups. It just says you guys consult them, but it doesn't say like what their input was. So just for like a future report, that would be interesting to read. Do you guys have anything about what they said today?
For tribal consultation, I think that's for select development projects and general plan amendments, but so nothing related to this specific report today, but we can certainly include that as a expanded discussion in the future.
Okay, cool. And then when it comes to the energy storage systems, obviously, I've been hearing a lot about it because it's proposed like in the district I'm representing. but there was nothing in there about like the state thing that the energy company is going to use as like an argument to like just say we can just do this. So I would have appreciated more information on kind of that state legislation aspect of it. And if that's not given here, then I would really like to echo that I would really appreciate a study session on kind of like what this entire process is. Cause like I've been hearing from community members and the energy like company. I enjoyed reading about the coastal access improvements. And there's a lot of really cool projects in terms of like climate adaptation, but I noticed like none of them were the Watsonville area. So I just wanted to publicly say that out loud. So maybe we could push for that like in the future. I know like the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County is acquiring different properties that is like ag land that is flooding too much to deal with like groundwater recharge. But also I think like coastal access in Watsonville is complicated because of things like the Pajaro Dunes development. But I think coastal access could include like access to the river mouth that is ecologically like a really cool place that a lot of people don't have access to. And it was culturally significant for tribes and would be cool to see public access increased there somehow by working with the land trust or even the people who work in ag. But I know that there's a lot of they have a lot of hesitations around that. Who applies to amend the urban services line?
Let me just start that by saying it's very difficult, if not impossible, to do.
Okay.
It could be a private developer.
Okay.
If you think of somebody like Xiaomenan,
okay.
It's one in the recent past who's kind of explored that option. So very rarely will it be a jurisdiction that does it. It usually ends up being a private developer as a result of services, getting water, sewer, something like that, where you'll apply to do it. In this county with Measure J, it's very difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
Really want to focus that development in those urban areas where there's services and not kind of reach into those suburban and rural areas. Very difficult to do here, but that's kind of how it happens, if that makes sense.
Okay, cool. Because it just said, like, no one's applied to do that. I was like, how does that even happen? Okay, thank you. I enjoyed reading about, like, the ADUs and how they're going up. I think it's really important for people who are, like, college age or there was something in there about, like, a family with an adult with disabilities. And I liked going on the website and seeing the three models and the three different sizes. So that's really cool. And I was wondering if there's any more plans for CDI to partner with consultants to make more models. Like, three are great and it's really cute. But I think, like, and maybe this is just like a hippie dream or whatever, but I like I've been hearing about like earthship homes or homes that are made of more natural materials. And sometimes it's cheaper, sometimes it's more expensive, but it could be a cool, I know that sometimes like one of the biggest issues with those kinds of styles of buildings is that it's hard to permit them. But if there was already like a pre-approved model, that could be a way to make like eco-friendly homes in the area that like self-temperature regulate. And even if it was an area that had trouble accessing water, those kind of homes like recycle a lot of their water from like when they shower to like water plants or whatever. So it's just an idea. Is there plans to develop more models?
Well, Commissioner Jimenez, I love your enthusiasm and we would love to report more of that in this report. But the fact of the matter is those three pre-designed, pre-approved ADU plans that we have on the website today, it looks tremendous. And you're right, they're beautiful, they're cute. They seem to function very well. We're getting very little interest. So maybe offline we can have a conversation about how we can maybe use the community outreach to get more interest in these. I can tell you there is some legislation going through right now that's already gotten through the assembly to increase that to single family and multifamily residential. And it's a concern for us because if we're not getting anything out of ADUs, which is our most heavily issued permit, how is this going to work for, you know, single family and multifamily and given the cost to come up with those pre-approved plans? So if you've got some ideas, I'd love to talk to you offline and see if we can get that moving.
Sure. Okay. Thanks.
For a motion.
And then for H3D, it says to limit rental application fees that could be charged by rental property managers or to increase grant funding for rental assistance. I guess that would pay for such fees. And then it goes into some of the recent state legislations. I just would have appreciated, like, instead of having to like look those up, if there could have been like a sentence on what each one of those state legislations was, just like a quick summary. Because then it says like they have like part of this issue, this issue has been partially addressed by these state legislations. And it's kind of, I guess I would like to know what exactly we're planning to do on it to like address it further. Because for me, it's an issue that we would give grant funding to keep funding these application fees, where I feel like developers kind of just use it as another way to make more money. And then the Nexus study, it says it was recently commissioned by Public Works. So is Public Works the only one that can commit, like ask for the Nexus study to start, or how does that process work?
No, the Nexus study was commissioned by us in planning. It's going, we're going through that right now. We have a consultant on board to, you know, do that. We hadn't done a Nexus study for over 10 years, so we put that in the housing element. So that's one of our programs. So that's ongoing right now.
Okay,
and that's a policy CDI thing.
That was supposed to be done about a year ago. What's the status on the Nexus study?
The Nexus studies in, is with the consultant, so we're hoping to get that out by June. There's a few Nexus studies, so I just wanted to provide clarification. There's a series of studies that are going on and are being managed by General Services Department along with CDI, Public Works, and Parks and others to look at the full range of impact fees. So there's two separate things going on.
Thank you. And then I just wanted to say I appreciate you bringing up like the transportation improvements, because I know that it's frustrating for there to be less parking, especially on some projects where we know that like it definitely wasn't enough parking, and it's not really where I felt it wasn't the best to not have the most parking, but there was nothing we could do about it. But I think ultimately the goal is to move further away from cars because it's more environmentally friendly. And I know that it's difficult because a lot of infrastructure is like outdated, but I just appreciated you bringing that up because I was going to mention it. And that's it for my comments and questions. Thank you.
I had one question. What about the development? I think it's 500 units at Cabrillo. That I didn't see anything about that. Isn't that in the works?
The housing. Cabrillo College?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's technically out of our jurisdictions. They're a community college. That are
we don't get any RENA credit at all for it.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bummer. They could build 2,000 units on their property, and we would get no credit for it, even though it would use our roads. And because I know that UCSC is a separate entity. I didn't realize Cabrillo also, because it does too. Okay. Is it 500 units or is it more?
Yeah, it's 600 units, and they did pay impact fees, and they did expand the sewer system to accommodate their own needs.
Yeah, but it doesn't count toward RENA. That's what
right.
I was asking.
They don't. That's right. And it's a dormitory style project. You can see it coming out of the ground now. They have foundations going in now. So you'll see the progress of it, but it's a dormitory style project. But to the point about using roads and transportation, they did pay their fair share.
Well, that's good to know. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
To make a motion to send this to the board.
Before you make a motion, I might suggest you open the public hearing.
Yeah, let's do it. Is there anyone who'd like to speak on this issue? Go for it.
Thank you. But before you start the clock, can I request 3 minutes?
Sure.
Thank you very much. My name is Becky Steinbruner. Thank you for this information, and thank you for this great discussion. This is really interesting. I live in District 2. And I want to thank the commissioner for bringing up the issue of making sure the public is involved, because there is a very large project in the pipeline, 2600 Mar Vista, the Village on the Green, that will have a 7-story
apartment building. And as you saw, 400 units, there's no public hearing is what I'm told by my county supervisor. There will be no public hearings because of some ministerial agreement that the county has entered into. And I'm not sure if this is the streamlining thing or what it is, but this is not right. And Commissioner Nichols, you know this. You don't want to leave the public out because it only increases public tension, resistance, and legal fees that eventually come down the pike. So please don't allow large projects without full public input and environmental review. I want to thank Commissioner Jimenez for bringing up the tribal. I do know that the county has recently instituted a tribal consultation fee to developers to address that. Thank you for asking the question about Cabrillo College. I had that too. There have been several civil grand jury, Santa Cruz County civil grand jury reports, excellent reports on these issues, and I encourage you to read them. Notably, regarding the affordable issue is the one that came out about the city of Santa Cruz not keeping track of who's getting these affordable units. It's called Housing for Whom, and the city's not tracking that. That's one thing the county needs to do, and to make sure that these affordable units are given preference to residents of Santa Cruz County, because it's a problem. So I would like to ask that that be included in there. I want to urge you to pay attention to Measure J. I have brought for you a copy of that document. I'll leave it with the clerk. Do not let this pressure from the state allow our county to lose valuable agricultural land. Measure J also instituted the rural urban services line. And I have, regarding the BESS, I have a press release that was from January 22, 2025 by the county supervisor saying they would involve the public with any BESS project in this county. I'll leave that with you as well. I'm concerned about the project at Mar Vista and also 578 Green Valley Road in the rural agricultural area. So thanks. Please, we need more public input rather than less. And I also have these crop reports for your edification.
Appreciate it.
Please protect the ag land.
Any other public comment at this time? Anyone in the room or online?
If you are joining us remotely and would like to give your public comment, please indicate so by raising your hand on Zoom, or if you are calling in via phone, please press star 9. I'll give folks a minute to do so. There appears to be no callers wishing to speak at this time.
Thank you.
One more question about CZU. Do the CZU rebuilds get to be counted in on the RENA? Because right now those people have no place. Can we somehow count in the CZU rebuilds, open the floodgates, as Commissioner Luke here said, and allow those rebuilt structures to be part of our RENA qualifications? Thank you.
From staff on that, can rebuilds, replacement housing, can that be counted?
Yeah,
no.
Well, as a building permit, issued building permit, it would work.
No. So it has to be a net new unit. So if it's a replacement unit, whether it was demolished or destroyed in the case of CZU, it doesn't count as towards our RENA because it's not a net new unit. It was a unit that has already been permitted in the past and we've already counted it, and we can't count it because that's essentially counting it twice. Yeah.
Now, there are some that weren't permitted to begin with that are being rebuilt and permitted. Could those be counted?
Sure. So if it was something that wasn't permitted in the past and rebuilt with a valid permit, those can be counted because they were never permitted.
Thank you. Okay. I have a question. So no one online? Okay, no one online. Moving this to the board, I feel like my colleague Commissioner Jimenez had really substantive comments, and I'm wondering if, you know, with our recommendation, this move to the board, that we could summarize some of that around, you know, with the BESS, an expanded discussion of the state process, Watsonville Coastal Access, examining whether or not the river mouth counts towards that. I think that might be a question for Coastal Commission, but and then also, I know, Mark, you mentioned it's not had a lot of uptake, but the idea that there are other kinds of model ADU plans out there, exploring those that use natural materials, and then also exploring outreach in terms of getting folks to utilize these existing plans, perhaps utilizing community networks, or, you know, looking at a partnership to get that word out so that people know that these pre-approved plans are there. It's a lovely resource. So I'm wondering if we couldn't, oh, and then of course, providing a list of the state legislation related to the rental application fees. Could we provide, you know, a summary that goes along with our recommendation to move this report to the board that incorporates those substantive comments and suggestions from my colleague?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, I would make a motion to move this to the board for their public hearing of this, with the addition of those that commentary and that feedback.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Commissioner Barton with a second by Nickel to move the motion, recommend that the Board of Supervisors hold a public hearing and direct staff to file the required annual progress report with the State Department of Housing and Community Development with the addition of the additional feedback provided by Commissioner Barton.
Jimenez.
Sorry?
The feedback from Commissioner Jimenez.
And Jimenez. So, Commissioner Barton?
Correct. It was Yesenia's commentary.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, wanted to incorporate that.
So then, Commissioner Barton?
Aye.
Commissioner Rizzuto?
I'm thinking, but I'll go aye on it.
Commissioner Nickel?
Aye.
Commissioner Jimenez?
Aye.
Commissioner Shepherd?
Aye.
Motion carries 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to the Secretary's report on upcoming meetings and agendas.
So as noted in the last Planning Commission, during the last Planning Commission, the Policy Division will be providing your commission consideration of the annual policy code amendments in the spring. The exact date hasn't been provided. And as for the next meeting, if we have no items, your commission will be notified of a cancellation. So we don't have anything coming unless at least that I'm aware of, but you'll be notified of any cancellations until the next meeting.
So the next meeting that's for sure is?
The next meeting, I believe, would be the February, gosh, what is it, the 25th? I believe that's been canceled.
Right.
And so then we're looking at March 11th, I think, March 10th or 11th. And your commission will be apprised when we have a more clarity from staff on any items. We do have development review applications ongoing. One of the staff had something coming in the spring from our group, but it's TBD at this point.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for that. I did want to kind of bring it back to this idea of a BESS study session, and wondering when we could schedule that.
So the Stephanie Hansen CDI, the board directed, the board approved a draft ordinance, which is still just a draft, and then directed that we proceed with environmental review. So our intent would be to do that, and then return when we have the code fully analyzed and the environmental impacts, we would come back to the Planning Commission at that time. So it would be later in the year.
And so we'd have a study session. We're requesting a study session prior to that.
Yeah, that's okay. Fine. We can do a study session. It's complicated stuff. So happy to do that.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And then also, you know, the Nexus study is an interesting one too. And I'm wondering if we'll get that from the consultant soon, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's not fully completed yet. In the draft we asked them to make some changes, and we're still reviewing the initial draft. That could come to the Planning Commission, although more likely we could also just go to the board with it to kind of keep it moving.
Okay. And can you just summarize the elements that are going to be there, to be there?
It looks at the affordable housing impact fee and whether that is set at the appropriate level given market conditions and actually building projects and the need for affordable housing. So it looks at that. And then it would look at the inclusionary rates of providing affordable housing within a market rate housing development. That's currently set by Measure J and our ordinances at 15%. So it would look at whether an adjustment in that, we probably have to set the floor at 15% in this community, but whether an adjustment for that is recommended.
Thank you.
Okay.
I had another question, Sheila. Do you have a sense of when 3500 Paul Sweet Road is going to come back to this body?
Paul Sweet Road. At this point, it's unclear. The staff is currently at the board on a number of items that housing projects your commission reviewed. I believe the item was considered yesterday at the board, one of those items. It's my understanding it could come back as early as March 11th. But potentially the last meeting in March as well. So that date has not been set yet, but so I would imagine in March, first or second meeting in March at this point.
Thank you.
I think the second meeting might be better, you know, if there was any choice. Because some of us have trips planned.
Sounds like if we could consider the second week in March, that'd be great.
Yeah, we'd like to all be here for that, for sure.
I'm sure the staff would appreciate the second meeting as well. So we'll see where we are with that. I know there's interest on the part of the county executive office and as well as the board in moving these projects forward in a timely fashion. So we'll do our best to meet everybody's needs.
Can you tell us briefly what happened at the board level with the Capitola Road?
I can do that. I was actually going to report on that this morning for the director's report. So the board did approve it. 841 Capitola was approved. I will tell you, though, that they were quite frustrated by the state laws tying our hands in many ways, which we've talked a lot about today. But they did, you know, validate your approval with voice concern. And they actually directed the people. There was a full house yesterday. They directed people to voice their frustrations to their state legislators because, you know, this project was a builder's remedy. There's a couple of them here that have been very controversial, including the Paul Suite. And in many ways, our hands are tied. And so the Board of Supervisors, a couple of them, directed people to voice that frustration to the legislators, state legislators. So, but it did get approval. And I'll wait for a little more report when it's my turn. Thank you.
Okay. And so the only builder's remedy that we really haven't seen come move along is the one on Graham Hill Road, which looks like from the major site, the major project site, is nothing's happening there. They haven't submitted anything, right?
Well, it's an incomplete application, and we know that there are not utilities in the area. So we don't see how they will ever have a complete application. Sewer is very, very far away, and it's, I don't think it's sized for. There's just so many problems with utilities. It's outside of this service boundaries from a LAFCO perspective. So there's so many hurdles that I don't think they will ever have a complete application. So I don't
anticipate that. How many times can they get an extension? They've had two or three already. Can they keep getting extensions forever?
Yes.
Commissioner, sorry, just a Brown Act reminder to, you can briefly ask questions about items not on the agenda, but avoid discussion.
I was just asking for an update on when, where, what.
That's fine. Just avoiding discussion. Thank you.
All right. Good to know. Thank you, guys. Okay, CDI's report, director's report. You're up. You're back up.
Thank you. You know, I was going to share the A41 Capitola, and on the backside where we're talking about our frustrations with the state, and I really want to, you know, speak to some of these topics today. A lot of what's going on today versus in the past is with regard to the building code. Even the building codes have changed dramatically from in the 70s, 80s up till today. But I do want to share with this commission that the building code is the floor of what we can allow to be built, you know, structurally and from a health perspective, whether it's utilities or, you know, all the geologic parameters. Our county does have a number of instances where we've raised the bar even more, and we're looking at those to reduce that bar to go with just the basic building code. Now, this is not zoning. This is not, you know, the parking issues. This is more Commissioner Rizzuto's comments about why it's so difficult to build here. It's not just here, it's in California. California building code is pretty restrictive. From the county's perspective, we're trying to take out some of those additional restrictions from the county code to lean on just the building code as the minimum. And so we hope to make some of those adjustments over these coming years, and we'll be bringing that mostly to the Board of Supervisors. We've had that conversation with them. So I want to let you know that this isn't just the county code. This is a building code issue, and it is restrictive. And then maybe tying back to Chair Barton's comments about Streamline Santa Cruz, we are looking at disaster relief as a policy. So that's one of the 12 projects we're studying right now. And so we're trying to balance all those things. We're trying to balance state codes. We're trying to balance local needs, but it's a challenge. And if you look across the nation, some areas don't have a building code. And I would highly recommend looking into those areas and seeing if you like that. So there's this balancing act that our nation is really trying to find. No codes at all versus maybe California. Maybe the codes are too restrictive, but it's something that we have to be aware of, that there's alternatives that aren't as pleasant either. So we have to be careful, right? So we're going to try to continue to thread that needle to find the right level of code for our community, to protect our community, but also to give our community the most flexibility to build affordable housing. But there's a big market out there. It's not just in our control. So I just wanted to share that perspective, and happy to take it offline and have more conversation about all of it. Thank you.
Thank you for all your hard work, by the way.
Thank you. County Council's report. Natalie, what do you got?
Nothing to report.
You were a star witness yesterday. Did it.
Thank Much you. Fun. A lot of pressure.
And written communication.
And then, as I noted, there were two late items added to the written communications, both regarding the BESS ordinance, the environmental review of the BESS ordinance.
Thank you. Okay, any closing comments before we adjourn? Okay, I think we can adjourn this meeting. We safely beaten it to death.
Hey, Matt.